Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 311 called Blair Nelson, part 3. This episode is sponsored by Embryo Solution. Guys, have you ever heard of embryo donation? I've been getting asked a lot about this lately, so I wanted to share some really important information. Embryo donation is when one family that's gone through IVF donates their embryos to support the family building efforts of another family. And I've partnered with Embryo Solution, an agency with an important mission to fill the gap between infertility and excess embryos by connecting all parties involved. Embryo donation costs approximately 30% less than traditional IVF. Embryo Solution is an inclusive agency working with single parents, couples in committed relationships, LGBTQ families, and more. With Embryo Solution, you're able to choose between an anonymous and an open relationship with the donor family. Plus, Embryo Solution ships the embryos to the clinic of your choice. So whether you're looking to build your family or you've gone through IVF and you have embryos in storage that you're not sure what to do with, Embryo Solution can help. They've got a team of experts at the ready to help you navigate whatever scenario you're going through. So to find out more, go to embryosolution.com. Again, that's embryosolution.com. Thanks, Embryo Solution. Okay, guys, I am so excited to share this conversation with you. This is my third recording with my business partner and dear, dear friend, Blair Nelson, a fab IVF mama. She and I co-founded Fertility Rally, as you guys probably know, and she has been through it for the better part of almost a decade now, she and her husband, Will, who I also adore. So she's going to tell us part 3 of her story. We recorded first in 2019, then we picked up again in 2022, and now this is the third installment of her infertility story, and she's going to talk about termination for medical reasons with her son, Baron. She's going to talk about mosaic embryos, and she's going to talk about having her mosaic miracle baby, Margot, in October. So without further ado, this is Blair's infertility story. Hello, my love. It's so good to see you. I've missed you.
I know. Hello. I've missed you. Hi. And everybody else too.
So we have to tell everybody you've been on maternity leave. We're kind of starting with the outcome of the story. And spoiler alert, I guess you could say, but everybody that knows you knows anyway that you just had Margot in October.
Yeah.
So we'll get into all that. But it's so funny because we met on this podcast in 2019. Which is so crazy, literally 6 years ago. And we've been working together for 5 years. And you're like one of my dearest friends and my sister at this point. So any excuse to talk to you. But it's cool if people go back and listen to the very first episode that I did with you. It was literally the first time we had a long conversation. And then the second episode was after we'd been working together for a couple of years. And now this is part 3. So they can hear the whole chronology of not only your fertility story, but our kind of like friendship and working relationship too, which is kind of cool. A lot has happened since you sent me that very first email.
A lot has happened.
but I just want to start out by saying I love you and I miss you. And I'm really happy we get to dive into the rest of your story. So last time we talked, you were 15 and a half weeks pregnant with Baron. Mm-hmm. And things were not looking good, and you were trying to figure out what you were going to do next. You know, you were most likely being faced with termination for medical reasons. So do you mind picking up there where we left off, and we'll just go from there?
Yeah, sure. So we found out in November of 2022 that at our NIPT scan, that things were looking amiss with the pregnancy. And I think I covered all of that in the second episode I did with you. So just as a quick recap for those that might not have listened to that episode, he was diagnosed initially by the OB and then confirmed by an MFM later that week that we found out that he had limb body wall complex, which It has nothing to do with what you can genetically test for during IVF. It's a completely random like cell misfire when a baby's developing. And it's, I forget the what the chances are of it happening, but I feel like it was like 1 in 100,000 or something crazy. I mean, it was just very, very rare. And my OB has been practicing forever and he's only ever seen it. I don't think he'd ever actually diagnosed one ever. MFMs see them more, of course, because they're with high risk pregnancies, but it was just kind of a shock to everybody because a genetically normal embryo, the pregnancy had been fine up until that point. And so fast forward to where we left off last time. After we got the confirmed diagnosis, we talked to several other MFMs to just tell us, you know, what is the safest thing for me? What is the most, you know, we had to make the decision in our opinion, what were the chances that this would ever result in a live baby? All those things. So it was a very, very complicated few weeks where we had to have a lot of conversations with a lot of different people and make the decision that was best for our family, our mental health, my fertility going forward, my life, all those things. So also for Hadley, you know, so we decided that we were going to terminate for medical reasons. There was absolutely no chance that the baby was going to live. I mean, just for a visual for people listening, and it's kind of, you know, gory and traumatic, but basically all his organs were outside of his body. His stomach never grew over his intestines, his heart, anything like that. And so while his heart was still beating, it was never going to be inside. None of that was ever going to be inside his body. He was never going to live. In fact, they thought he would probably die in utero. But the thing with terminations for medical reasons and high-risk pregnancies like that is the longer you carry, the more risky it is for you as the mother. It could compromise your life, your fertility going forward. And so for all of those reasons, we decided to terminate. I'm in Austin, Texas. And so this was not too far after the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And so we had to make a decision, you know, if we were going to terminate, we needed to travel. And so we had called around to a few different states, a few different clinics, talked to some doctors under the radar, because obviously everyone's scared to give advice to patients about all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we decided to go to Denver. Mm-hmm. And we traveled there December, I think it was 18th, and had the termination. It's a 2-day process, a second trimester termination. Also, you can use the word abortion, although people don't like to use it because it has such a bad connotation. Hopefully, mm-hmm. we're changing that with what you and I do, Allie. But, and I mean, that is what it is.
Yeah.
I think it makes people like me that have gone through this, makes it a little bit easier to say termination for medical reasons instead of just like termination by choice, like baby was healthy and we just didn't want it. It's like kind of a little bit of a different category, right, at least in this space, which is also controversial. But anyway, right. So we traveled to Denver. It's a 2-day process. The first day you go in and they place what they call laminaria into your cervix. And it's basically like bamboo sticks that expand and kind of dilate you for the following day's procedure of the actual termination. So, you know, it was just a weird, I mean, an awful trip because mm-hmm. you know why you're going. I had to leave Hadley at home with my parents. They're stressed. They're worried about me mentally and physically. Will feels helpless. He's worried about all the things. I'm worried about all the things. You know, you hop on these forums to see, you know, to Google every possible thing you can about what the procedure is going to be like. Is it painful? Is it, you know, can things go wrong? All these different things. And so Will and I were eyeball deep in all these forums and mm-hmm. we were terrified, and we get there and we thought, oh, well, we might as well stay in a nice hotel while we're here. I mean, it's the one thing we can do.
Well, it's the one thing you can control too.
Yeah. To make it suck less, you know?
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and at this point, I think I might've talked about it on the second episode I did with you, but at this point I look pregnant. And so it's really hard to, you know, get on a plane, be in public places. Some people will ask you about the pregnancy and things like that. And so that's just another thing people don't think about when you're going through something like this. And
you had talked about going to Target to look for oversized sweaters because you wanted to hide your bump. But also what I thought was listening to it back, I started like welling up again because I remember how painful it was and still is. I mean, it doesn't ever go away, but when you were saying, I can't even really touch my bump. Now I'm like getting tears in my eyes. Like, because it was so traumatic because you knew that you were not going to walk away with a live baby, but he was still in there. And that is such a, you know, people just don't talk about that, Blair. Like, I'm so like proud of you for doing it. And I thank you so much. And, you know, you were so real about it. So I'd urge everybody, listen to that episode and the one before it too, so you can get the full picture. But before we get into what happened in Colorado, can you explain to people who might not know, like, why can't they do it in Texas? I mean, obviously Roe v. Wade being overturned, but can you break it down a little bit more?
Yeah. So Roe v. Wade being overturned essentially gave the states the right to decide what sort of rules they wanted to put around reproduction and abortion and all those things. In Texas, people listening probably know this way better than me, but in Texas, there's a heartbeat law. In Texas, you can only get a termination if you get an official diagnosis that, like, your life is in danger, essentially.
Right.
Which is very, it's not a black and white thing. And they're trying to make it a black and white thing.
Right.
And it's just not. And so, for instance, like, when I left, my life was not in danger. But when I got there, it was. And so there's things that happen like this all the time where, you know, people who have never been, have never experienced something like this are the people that are making the laws for us. And that's the problem. People that don't prioritize or understand women's health, they say they do, but they don't. They're not willing to educate themselves. And so those are the nuts and bolts of it. And so we get there and I had read and researched that it can be painful, and to advocate for yourself and ask for anxiety medication, ask for pain medicine, all those things. So I was very lucky. The clinic that I went to, it's the Women Health Center in Colorado that's attached to the University of Colorado Hospital, Teaching Hospital. I was very lucky. Number one, I didn't even think, like, well, does it matter that it's attached to a, not attached physically, but associated with the hospital, because I didn't think I would need to be in the hospital. But I was very blessed that it was. I was very blessed that the medical staff there were all, like, young people, most of them women, who were very, very empathetic and met me where I was at and listened to all of my requests. They did give me anxiety medication and pain medication, like, made it as painless as possible. You know, and one thing that people don't talk about much is that, you know, when you go in for a termination and abortion, like, you have to go in there by yourself. You have to sign this paperwork that no one's forcing you to be there. You have to make decisions about the baby's remains. Because we were out of state, we had to deal with a mortuary. It was just very, it was just a lot of things that blindsided you when you're already like out of your environment with doctors you don't know, who don't know your health history. It's just all, it's just a lot. And I just remember, like, getting really emotional, having to check that, yes, I'm here for an abortion. No, my husband's not forcing me to be here, or whoever else is not forcing me to be here. Because it's just like, this paperwork doesn't take into account for people that are here that want this so desperately.
Right. It's like you were saying before, it's not a black and white issue, but the paperwork makes it kind of black and white. And that,
And I mean, I get why they have to do the paperwork, right? I mean, we all really understand that. But that was really hard. And then deciding what to do with the remains, like, Will and I didn't agree on that. He didn't really care about having any sort of remains. I did. And he left it up to me to decide. And I'm really glad that I did it. That was some advice I had gotten, is like, you can never get it back. So you don't have to look at it, you know, or, but it, you know, one day you just, people grieve differently. And maybe one day you will want something. Right.
So,
and I just remember them telling me, like, he's so disfigured. We don't even know if we'll be able to get footprints and, like, stuff like that. So just prepare yourself for that. But we can obviously definitely cremate. And then you also have to, there's question, like, do you want a single cremation or can we cremate it with other babies? I mean, it's like just a lot.
Things that you never think that you're going to have to think about and decide. Yes. And also, like, right there in the moment when you're traumatized, how do you even make
Well, luckily, I had reached out to several women. You know, there's a great resource, TFMR Mamas on Instagram.
Yeah, it's actually talked about Emma K. Bell, right?
Emma K. Bell, yes. So she's in Dubai. She's the best. She had gone through it. Yeah. But I had so many resources, like, kind of warning me. But, you know, it's still like you can't remember everything. I've given so much advice to people who have been in my shoes after me. And you don't remember it all, you know. So I felt somewhat prepared. But there were the things that I mentioned that I wasn't expecting.
Right.
So anyway, long story short, I went in that second day on December 20th for the actual termination procedure. And, you know, what some advice I had gotten, and like, this is all graphic, so sorry, but some advice I had gotten was wear AirPods or something, listen to something, because you can hear things that are happening down there because you're not fully sedated. You don't feel any pain, but like, you're still aware. And I was like, okay, so what music am I supposed to listen to?
Exactly.
For
what do you listen to that's never going to remind you of that moment again? Like, do you want your favorite song, or do you want something white noise, or like, I don't know. Yeah. How do you make that decision?
Well, I don't know. Cause I didn't really, I knew I had my AirPods and everything, and this sounds ridiculous, but I listened to Lizzo. I was like, I'm going to listen to a happy song.
I love
like,
that.
I don't know. And have I ever listened to it again? Probably not.
Right.
Yeah. But so I just remember kind of being out of it, turning the music on, and then I just felt like this huge rush of warmth down there. And I was like, I don't know if this is normal, whatever. They kind of start freaking out. I was half with it, half not. They had told Will it was going to take like 15 minutes, 30, 45 minutes later. He's still in the waiting room. He's freaking out. So I had started hemorrhaging, basically, and what they think might have happened, still no way to truly confirm it, is that I had placenta accreta, which means that your placenta is attached to your uterine wall. And when they were performing the procedure, it ripped some of my uterus off, which caused the hemorrhage. Second trimester terminations are also very, you know, they're hard procedures to do.
Right. It's like nuanced.
They come with a lot of complications, so it could have just been a complication. And I'll say, like, the day before, when they went in and did the ultrasound, they did not see an accreta. They felt like there was a clean break in my placenta and my uterus. So I don't know. We still don't know. That's up in the air.
And you had, didn't you have placenta previa with this one as well? I thought you had mentioned that.
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Okay.
And I mean, that could have resolved itself over time, as you know.
Right.
But at that point, yes, it was previa. So anyway, they put a Foley bulb in, essentially, to put pressure on my uterus to see if the blood would clot and stop bleeding. But they were like,
wait, tell people what that is. It's kind of like a balloon, right?
Yeah. So they insert it through your cervix and they blow it up like a balloon. It's used for inductions as well, to put pressure on the cervix to open, which they actually used on me with Hadley. So I at least was familiar with what that was. I was like, okay, I actually know what this is. And then, you know, I started kind of coming to more and more, and they decided that they wanted me to transfer to a hospital because they were afraid that I had lost too much blood. I think it was a pint at that point, and they were worried I was going to need a transfusion. So they were like, the fastest way, since you're stable, to get you there is for your husband to drive you. You can do an ambulance. It's going to take longer. It's going to cost a lot of money. You make the decision, though. We'll facilitate either, and they'll be expecting you at the hospital. So Will and I decided that we were going to drive. So I'm in a gown with this hose hanging out of me, essentially.
Oh, my God. In a rental car, right?
In a rental car. They take us out of the back door of the clinic because they don't want anyone in the waiting room to see. They put down puppy pads in the front seat, and they're just like, okay, we'll see you there.
Oh, my God. Why was the ambulance going to take so long? Because they had to, like, order it and, like, all that, like, logistics?
Yeah, and I think
that's like so fucked up.
I know, and prioritizing other emergencies and like, anyway, just so we just decided to do that. And then once I got there, they had no clue who I was. You know, they hadn't gotten the information like logged. You know how intake is with hospitals.
Yeah,
and so they had me just in the ER and triage, and my blood pressure was dropping, and they were kind of preparing for a transfusion. And then finally, somebody from the team, from the clinic came in, and then I felt better. And then somebody from the OB department of the hospital came in too. And they said, because I was still stable, I didn't have to get a transfusion, but like if things had gotten worse, I would have. So that was scary. And then they told me I had two options. I could get a UAE surgery, which is a uterine artery embolism. just where they go in through your through like the top of your thigh into the main artery that pumps blood to the uterus. And they put like a bunch of pellets, like think when you buy something, those little silicone packet pellets, kind of similar to that. They fill your artery with that. And the hope is that that stops the bleeding. Or I could get a hysterectomy, but like there was the only two options because I was just going to keep hemorrhaging. So Will and I decided we wanted to try to save my uterus, obviously, because we wanted more children. So we went into that surgery. And again, it was one of those, it'll take 45 minutes. It took an hour and a half. Will's freaking out. It was a Grey's Anatomy moment because it's a teaching hospital. And I just remember there being like a theater above my surgery, like with people watching.
Right. McSteamies up there.
And I thought that was so crazy, but also cool. I mean, that because they don't do those very often, I don't think. And so the procedure, you know, the surgery part was successful, but really then it's just a wait and see. So they continue with the Foley bulb. And then a day later, they take it out. And it's like, okay, if the bleeding stops, you know, within reason. It's kind of like postpartum bleeding. Like you still have bleeding, but we don't want to see any spots. We don't want to be discussing, things like that. Then we know it was successful. And if it didn't, then you're going to have a hysterectomy. And so just being in the hospital for 24 hours, just not knowing was brutal. I mean, I was, again, sort of out of it on different medications. I know it was probably harder on Will mentally at that point. And you know, then the doctor that had been taking care of me, I'll never forget her name, Dr. Klein, she came and sat with me and she was kind of crying and because she was going through infertility herself.
Oh my gosh.
And she was just like, I was like, what does this mean? Like, if this works, can I get pregnant again? Should I try to get pregnant again? And more people than not told me not to try again, because if it was an Accreta, they were worried that Accreta could reoccur. There's a slight chance for Accreta to occur if you've had a previous Accreta. But then in addition to that, having the UAE surgery, there are concerns that there won't be enough blood flow to the uterus, that the placenta won't be healthy enough to support the baby, things like that. So that was really depressing. And in that moment, I think Will was so scared that he was like, we can do surrogacy. We'll just do surrogacy. It's not a big deal, because he's terrified. Because he's like, you could have died, Blair. I mean, like,
yeah.
And I was scared too. And so I was like, okay, well, let's just get through this. And then we'll decide.
Right.
And so they discharged me, I think a day later. We barely made it home in time for Christmas. It was crazy snowy in Denver. We were afraid we weren't going to get out to see Hadley on Christmas Eve and Christmas. I think we got home the 23rd. God. And I mean, the physical recovery, it was kind of similar to Emily. I mean, you did just technically have a baby, right? But it was similar to postpartum. I wouldn't say the bleeding was as bad, but it was definitely really hard. Your hormones still drop. My milk came in. Like all sorts of other things you don't think about. Like you still have to go through all the hormonal shifts and even the milk in some cases, even though you didn't bring home a baby. And so that was really hard. Oh my God.
I'm so sorry about all that. So what do you do with when the milk comes in?
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
It wasn't a lot. I just remember being in the shower like a couple of days after we got home and being like, what is going on? And I was like, oh, I'm having milk come in. And so it wasn't bad enough to where I had to pump and dial it back. But some people, if it's later on in their pregnancy, they do.
Yeah.
And think about that, like having to pump,
yeah,
or not, you know,
it's just awful.
Just to stay out of pain and, you know,
right.
Anyway, we just kind of stumbled through Christmas, tried our best to be present and happy with Hadley, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like she was the only thing keeping us smiling and laughing. And so she was such a blessing at that time. And, you know, it was a lot. And they kept trying to deliver the ashes, fast forward a few weeks, they kept trying to deliver the ashes. on certain days that I said I was available, they wouldn't come on those days. I mean, I was like, I have to go to work. I mean, I can't sit around all week just waiting for you guys
to show up. I remember you telling me about this because this is something you have to be there to receive the package and like sign for it, right?
Right.
And so that's not what happened, right?
No. And so finally, after like their third attempt, they took it to a post office and like had put a slip on my door, and I had to go to the post office and stand at the little door, you know, like where the packages are that weren't delivered, and give them the slip. And then I remember the person in front of me was picking up tennis shoes, and then I'm next, and they hand me a box with a huge red sticker that says cremated remains. And I have to walk through the post office with it.
Babe.
And I think that was like when I had my first like true breakdown.
I just got like a physical, like a psychosomatic, like a gut punch feeling, like, because I remember you telling me about that. And I remember how hard it was.
Yeah, it was
bad. I have like a sympathy pain for you right now. Yeah. Like, it makes me so sick to my stomach. I'm sorry.
Well, and it's just like little things, not little things. That was a big thing. But you never know when you're going to be blindsided with grief or a reminder, like an obvious one like that or not so obvious. And it's just really hard to shake. It's hard to go back to normal life. It's hard to do all the things. But I think anybody listening to this that has infertility knows like sometimes the best thing is to just move forward with the next step, you know, like, and so we decided that we were going to meet with some more MFMs, talk to them about the risks of getting pregnant again, because at that point we had two embryos left, one day six normal boy and one day six low-level mosaic girl. And so in May, so we gave ourselves 5 months. Let's kind of go through some therapy. I went to EMDR therapy, which I highly recommend.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I'm obsessed with that. I really want to do that myself too.
Yeah, there's different ways of doing it. So some people, so EMDR therapy basically in a nutshell takes you back. First of all, you identify a time and a place where you feel completely relaxed and at peace. And for me, weirdly enough, it was acupuncture. Mm-hmm. That's like the only time I ever relax and ever lay still in a dark place and listen to music, you know? And so that was my like happy place. And then you identify one or two major triggering moments that take you back to the trauma. And for me, it was in the scan where we found out that something was wrong. And then it was like the blood gushing moment. So like those were my two moments that were haunting me the most. And so different practitioners do it different ways, but some people tap, some people use pulsators. And basically, you go visit that moment and then you think of your happy place kind of thing. And it's all has to do with like the pulsators connect in your mind. When your mind goes to the traumatic moment, you're able to quickly connect to the peaceful moment. So it's so that you don't spiral.
It's almost like rewiring your memory, right? Or like rewiring your brain almost.
Yeah. And it really worked for me. Like some people have to go several times for months and months. I think I went 4 times and felt like I was able to control it.
Wow.
Which was good. So then we decided to transfer the boy in May, and that was unsuccessful, which was awful. And I guess I should say prior to the transfer, we met with several MFMs to ask their advice on should I get pregnant again. Our IVF doctor basically said, I'll do whatever the MFMs say. Like that is their realm of expertise. Mine is getting the embryos and transferring them. And so we met with one MFM who we just adored. And he's more faith-based. Like he's a strong Christian, and he was just, he kind of laid out a bunch of stats for us of your odds of another accreta, if that's really what you had, or only 2% more. The odds of another limb body wall complex are basically none. And he said, and I think that if you guys want to have another baby, you should be able to. So he kind of gave us a big boost of confidence.
Yeah.
And then we met with another MFM who actually ended up being my MFM with Margo. Told me absolutely don't do it.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, and he's actually an accreta specialist. And so that's why I think he, like worst case scenario, if you get pregnant, have another repeat accreta, you go into your C-section knowing number one, you're going to be completely under and you're going to get your uterus out. So you're going to have a hysterectomy. So it's like mm-hmm. a very involved delivery.
Right.
And it's a really hard recovery on the mom. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I think, you know, his
to avoid that.
His whole comment was like, you know, financially, I know that surrogacy is a really tough option and takes forever. And, you know, we all listening to this podcast, we all know that. But I also was like, listen, I feel like this surgery worked for a reason. We have another embryo left or two at that time. And let's do it kind of thing. And it took a long time for Will and I to get on that same page because it was scary what happened in Denver. So
yeah,
May didn't work. And then we
meaning
waited.
it didn't take, right?
It didn't take at all. Like yeah. negative pregnancy tests, like 7 days past the transfer and then negative beta just flat out didn't work.
What did that do to you guys mentally? Like, I feel like you're so strong, but I know that some of these moments were just like earth shattering for you, right?
Yeah, it was really hard because that was our last quote unquote normal embryo.
Yeah.
We had done, you know, it had been a 7 year journey at that point, 6.5, 7. We had done 5 retrievals. I mean, it took us forever to get the embryos that we had. So it was a huge blow that was our last, I'm doing air quotes, normal one.
Right.
And then that sent us into this whole decision making of do we do another retrieval to try to get normal embryos or do we take a chance on this low-level mosaic embryo and see what happens? Then we ended up meeting with a genetic counselor, Megan Doyle. I cannot speak more highly of her.
She's done shout out, Megan.
Yeah, she's done some fertility rally stuff for us. She's helped a bunch of our members, tons of people in the community outside of fertility rally. And so we had a couple of really long calls with her where she will break down your specific embryo in terms of what chromosomes are affected, how affected they are. If that mosaicism does take over, what are the risks on that chromosome? Like, is it a club foot? Is it a cleft lip? Is it developmental delays when they're mm-hmm. toddlers? Like, what is it? For us, one of the ones affected just wouldn't take at all. So we felt good about that. Like, okay, if this mosaicism truly takes over, it just wouldn't, the transfer wouldn't be successful. So we're like, okay, we can live with that. Mm-hmm. The other one had a potential minor heart defect, cleft lip, and I think maybe a club foot. It was something, but that being said, there has never, ever been an IVF transfer of a mosaic embryo with that mosaicism that has any of those things or that resulted in a positive pregnancy test. So the research on that mosaicism was with babies conceived naturally, right. Sex babies.
Right.
So
right,
anyway,
right. Free
we
babies.
Felt, yeah.
As Regina says.
Yeah. We got to a place where we mentally felt comfortable to transfer the mosaic embryo. Also, we're lucky our doctor, Dr. Vaughn at Texas Fertility Center, does transfer mosaic embryos. Some doctors won't. The science is changing, as you and I both know, Ali, that now they're saying that Margot probably wouldn't even be considered mosaic because she was a low level and it was, you know, and
wow.
even when our first round of embryos was made in 2018, they wouldn't have considered her mosaic. So it really is so new in the field and they're just trying to figure it out. And, you know, my hope is that they do sooner rather than later.
Right. So when was she, what's the date on? So when was her embryo created?
So her and Hadley and Baron and the one that didn't work.
Okay. So ours
were May of 2020 during COVID.
Okay. Got it. So interesting. And the whole thing about mosaics and like you said, how it's rapidly changing and there's more and more research, thank God. And people like Megan Doyle breaking it down and helping people. It's so interesting, but I feel like we have barely scratched the surface when it comes
barely
to mosaics.
Barely scratched the surface. And it's, I mean, I could go on and on about mosaicism. Everyone, if they're interested, look up Megan Doyle.
Yeah.
Also, we've done some really interesting talks with Fertility Rally on it as well. So it's just more and more research is coming up and we're kind of learning that all of us have some sort of mosaicism. Sometimes the tests pick it up, sometimes they don't. And it's not as big of a scary deal as what we used to think even just a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll all be staying tuned on that. But
isn't there something too, Blair, with the testing where like it depends on what part of the embryo they like retrieve the cells from?
Well, right. And
you could get varying results. Like it's just not an exact science, right?
Well, and yeah, they're not, of course, they're not testing the baby. What becomes the baby, the inner cell mass, they're testing the trophectoderm. So it's like, okay, well, there is a potential where the placenta has a mosaicism, but the baby does not. Mm. And so a lot of people will transfer mosaic embryos. And one thing that's scary is people then want to do a amniocentesis to actually test the baby itself. Mm-hmm. We ended up opting not to do that with Margot because we had a clean NIPT, we had a clean anatomy scan, and we felt fine that the things we would have seen would have been picked up on those tests. So we didn't feel like we needed to go in and do the amnio. But a lot of people do, and a lot of people do it for peace of mind, and I don't blame them.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, we always talk about everybody's journey is their own journey. This is your story, you know, and this is what you did that's best for you and Will and for Hen. And I hope anyone listening to this is reserving any sort of judgment. It doesn't belong in the story at all.
Yeah. Well, and no judgment if you made different decisions and you're listening 100%. To the story and you've been in a similar situation to me.
100%.
So yeah, then we decided to take a really long break. So we wanted to take the rest of the year off. So June through December, because we had just been in this, you know, infertility hell vortex for forever. Like I was having mental health issues. Will always postpones his grief until really interesting time, like way afterwards. And so that happened to him.
Yeah.
Several months afterwards. And so anyway, then 2024 comes around. I'm like, what year is it?
And, I know. So that was 2023. You took the break.
Yeah. The rest of 2023, we took the break. We did the transfer of the mosaic embryo in February and it worked. And it was crazy. I mean, I remember just holding the pregnancy test and just like, I was at home by myself that day and I told Will I was going to test. He's like, okay. And I was just like shaking so much. Like I could barely hold it. And when I saw the line, I freaked out. I called Will. He was in a meeting. He didn't answer. And then he texted me and he goes, I'm assuming if you called me, it's good news.
Yeah.
And so he called me back when he could. And we were so excited. And of course, that's only the beginning, as everybody knows. You wait for all your numbers to double, you worry that things are going to go wrong. Like our big thing, our big hurdle was NIPT, getting through that since that had been so traumatic with Baron.
And when does that normally happen again? What week?
That's normally at around 12 weeks. We did everything early as we could, just because of what had happened. And that's what our doctor wanted us to do. So we did it around 9-10 weeks. And everything looked good. The blood work came back normal. The baby looked good. And then we did our anatomy scan a little early as well. And we also did the fetal echo at the same time to rule out any heart issues. So we were able to do like one really long appointment to feel really good about things. I think it was week 19. And then, you know, my pregnancy was pretty uneventful, to be honest. It was, you know, you have all the typical aches and pains and insomnia. Right. And, you know, we do an immune protocol for our transfers. So I was on prednisone for forever and PIO shots and all that stuff. Right. But once we got done with all of that, it was pretty uneventful. I will say much more exhausting. It was really nice being pregnant during COVID. I got to work from my bed with Hadley. Right.
And you didn't have a toddler running around.
Right. And so then I'm chasing a toddler, raising her and going into the office almost every day. So yeah, it was a lot in that regard, but physically it was fine.
Was there ever a point, Blair, where you were able to like exhale? You know, we talk about this a lot in pregnancy after infertility or loss. You know, it's almost like not until that baby's in my arms am I going to feel, you know, like not even relax, but just like you can breathe. Like, did you feel that way or were you able to kind of enjoy it at any point?
Not really, because they ended up diagnosing me with where you have excess amniotic fluid.
Okay.
And so that can send you into early labor, that can mess with your blood pressure, that can do all sorts of things. So that was something stressful at the end. And then I went in the last couple of appointments and it had resolved itself out of nowhere. We ended up not going to a family wedding where Hadley was supposed to be the flower girl because we were so worried about the fluid. And then of course that next appointment, everything was fine. Mm-hmm. So we had a scheduled C-section for Margot at 39 weeks, and it went great. We decided not to do a VBAC only because the success rates of an induced VBAC are very low. Mm-hmm. And I had already done a failed induction, and I was like, no, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I just want to check in and have a baby 2 hours later. After all of this, I'm going to spare myself.
Again, it's like a modicum of control too, where it's like, I know that here's the plan, right?
Yeah. And so I just remember being so much more aware for that C-section than Hadley's, because I was so exhausted during Hadley's. So I was so aware. I was so concerned that I was going to have an accreta, even though we didn't see anything. I was worried that something was going to go on with my uterus because of the surgery, the previous surgery. And so once I heard her cry and Will was over there dealing with her and they said she looked good, I just remember being so concerned. Okay, now they have to get the placenta out. And I kept asking my doctor, I was like, is it out? Is it out? Is it clear? Is it clear? And he's like, yeah, Blair, just 1 second. It takes a while. Oh. And then he took it out. He was like, it's clear. You're good. Everything's good. I'm sewing you up now. And I was like, okay, thank God.
Yes.
And yeah, so she's here. And
she's here and she's amazing.
Mighty Mosaic Miracle Margot. Yeah. So I would just say, I guess, you know, a piece of advice I have to take away is do your research. If you do have a mosaic embryo, don't count it out, but do your research. Talk to a genetic counselor, find resources online, talk to people like me. There's a really good Facebook group called My Perfect Mosaic Embryo that was a huge help to Will and me. We've posted all about Margot on it. You can, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really great. It's not one of those intense forums. So here we are. She's 12 weeks old tomorrow.
Already?
Yeah, just doing great. And I'm soaking in the last few weeks of my maternity leave. And then I go back to work on the 3rd. She starts school on the 3rd. And yeah.
And so how is Hadley as a big sister?
She's wonderful. Their age gap is 3.5 years, which I wanted them to be 2 years apart, which Baron and Hadley would have been exactly 2 years. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think it turned out for the best for us because Hadley is helpful. She kind of understands being gentle. She understands we need to do stuff for baby. She calls her baby. She always wants to hold her. She's very sweet. She's always like, Margo, you're so cute. which is adorable, but yeah. So,
and they're like, it's like her little mini me too. Like they look so much alike.
They look so much alike. So yeah, it's been great. Hadley's been a great big sis.
Okay, guys, definitely do not forget to check out Fertility Rally. If you want to become a member, we are more than happy to have you. Check us out on Instagram at Fertility Rally or online, fertilityrally.com. You can always DM me if you want to check out one of our groups. You can DM me at Fertility Rally or InfertileAF Stories on Instagram. And also check out my children's book about IVF, which is called Work of Art. It is up for free shipping right now through the end of January. And you can get it at InfertileAFGroup.com. So thank you guys for listening. Thanks again to Blair for sharing her truth and always being real AF. Love you guys. Check out Fertility Rally. Come join us. All right. Talk to you soon.